This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hello, everyone in Patriots Nation, and welcome back to the latest and always greatest, today might even be extra greatest edition of Six Rings and Football Things, brought to you by WEEI, Odyssey, and 2400 Sports. Per use, you got me, your old pal Nick Fitzy Stevens, alongside Andy Jumbo Hart. And today, Andy, we've got a very special guest in the neighborhood, because we are joined by one of the authors of The Drafting Stage, creating a marketplace for NFL draft picks. He is one of the sharp, bright, analytical minds behind the analytical wizardry that is known as POOF, as we like to say sometimes here on the show, PFF, Pro Football Focus, the one and the only, at PFF underscore Brad. Brad Spielberger joins the show today to drop some knowledge and give us some thoughts what the world of number crunchers outside 495 and 128 thinks about the New England Patriots. Brad, how are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me, and appreciate the intro.
Oh, yeah. We're all about great intros. What we usually like to do is peak with the intro, and then it's diminishing returns the rest of the
downhill from there.
That fits.
Yeah, 100%. So listen, I just wanted to start off. Let's take a step back to see where we were and how we did before we get into where we are now and what's going on. So I saw a tweet the other day, and I understand that DVOA and PFF are two completely different analytical numerical realms who may share some parts of the concentric analytical circle. But I saw Mina Kimes puts out this tweet the other day saying that somehow the Patriots finished first in weighted defensive DVOA, I want to say, for the 2022 season, which kind of caught me off guard. You know, we knew the defense was good, but I wasn't sure it was that good per se. So where does PFF stand on how the Pats did last year offensively and defensively, especially considering how just dysfunctional, if we're being kind, the offense was under Matt Patricia and Joe Judge?
Yeah, funny you mentioned that tweet, actually. I was going to interact with it. So there's a metric that I think applies to any analytical quote-unquote person, which is EPA per play, or expected points added per play, kind of in the lexicon for anyone. And really what that is, you know, context and situation adjusting, where the simplest example, 4 yards on first and 10 is not as valuable as 4 yards on third and four, right? So like you take all that into account and kind of adjust everything. The Patriots defense was number one in EPA per play allowed for the season last year. But I think the big thing with them, when you dive into the numbers, they absolutely demolished and dominated a lot of bad quarterbacks. And some of the better quarterbacks were able to move the ball against them and score some points. Look, they had games like the Lions game where a high-powered offense got blanked. Like, yeah, it wasn't just that. But I do think, you know, what we've looked at a lot is defensive performance often can just be dictated by how good was the quarterback and offense you were playing against. So I think they are a good unit. I think we'll get into the additions this offseason. And they made a lot of nice ones, particularly in the draft. But if you ask me who was the number one defense in the NFL last year, I'm not sure I would answer the New England Patriots, even though I do think they're up there. As for the offense, look, yeah, I mean, I think the biggest offseason addition might simply be going from Matt Patricia to Bill O'Brien, and just having more of a cohesive, I think, fluid, an offense that's just not as choppy. And I think Mac Jones, his frustration to a degree was warranted. I think even personnel usage is simple as why was Kendrick Bourne in the doghouse when he's clearly a very productive and good player, a lot of things. So anyway, it wasn't great. And the offensive line can be a little bit better as well. And they need to have just a better run offense with Bill O'Brien.
So Brad, one of the things we talk a lot about on this podcast, both leading up to the draft, free agency, or just in general, is Patriots lack a number one offensive weapon. They are one of the few teams in the NFL that it's really hard to say who's their go-to guy. And we lived Julian Edelman and Rob Gronkowski and going back to Moss, like Brady always had that guy or often had that guy. In terms of an analytical or a statistical perspective, how much does them not having that elite go-to option on the offense affect what they're able to do offensively compared to the rest of the league?
Yeah, it's funny. I think the reason I have my job, honestly, the genesis of it all was being fascinated by like the Deion Branch days and the early Patriots days and how I think you could argue they didn't have like an alpha wide receiver, but then he kind of realized like, yeah, they've kind of just replaced getting these amazing tight ends to be their go-to guy in the red area on third down in key situations. And that's a cheaper position. So it was kind of like, you know, money balling the entire operation. But I do think it matters. I think right now you have every style of player and they're trying to kind of like piece together a number one with, okay, our contested catch guys, Devontae Parker, our speedy guys, you know, maybe Tyquan Thornton, you know, this, that, the other. But I think it does matter. I think on money downs and tough situations when it's maybe, you know, a big third down or Mac is kind of scrambling, keeping a play alive, to not have that guy that in your mind, you just say, you know what, like, that's my go-to guy. I'm going to let him make a play. I'll live or die by that player. I think it does have an impact. And they still don't really have that guy after this offseason. Again, a lot of nice pieces, but not that number one alpha type dude.
Yeah, there was talk all offseason long of potentially going after one like a DeAndre Hopkins. Does he still, per your numbers, have what it takes to be a number one receiver? I know like in only 9 games last year, he had over 700 yards receiving, bunch of catches, 3 touchdowns. And that was coming from the likes of like you, me, and Andy, a.k.a. Trace McSorley, Colt McCoy, and, you know, half of a – okay, yeah, all right.
Trace McSorley's one of us now.
Not for long. He puts the not for long in NFL. Trust me, Andy, okay? I give Malik Cunningham a far better chance of being the third quarterback on the Patriots this year. But, like, would a DeAndre Hopkins help the Patriots? Like, we all think, like, there's the star power of, like, yeah, I want D-Hop. I want a number one receiver. But do the numbers bear out that he would be a very worthy to at least worthy addition to the offense?
So I don't think they would trade for his current contract, which I guess is a bit of a different conversation. It's obviously not just football, but I mean, the Patriots are not in the business of giving up picks to get a 30-year-old with a $19.5 million salary. That's why they're the Patriots in a lot of ways. So, but look, if he does maybe get cut, you know, because Arizona cannot find a suitor, I don't know about the relationship with Bill O'Brien and DeAndre Hopkins. I won't speculate on that. I don't think it's the greatest, but yeah, like, yes, he's still over the last 3 seasons, even with injuries and the suspension, is a top 10 graded wide receiver for us. Like you mentioned, it was very productive. Yeah, he was just kind of getting balls chucked at him willy-nilly, but a ton of targets, a lot of big plays. He's still one of the best contested catch, you know, guys in the NFL.
So heading into the draft, I thought the Patriots' biggest need was cornerback. And I thought the best cornerback in the draft was Christian Gonzalez. And I thought if they wanted to fill need with him, they would have to trade up maybe top 8, who knows, top 5. They get Christian Gonzalez at 17, trading down. How good a pick do you think that is? Value-based, Patriots word, value at 17. And what statistically do you think he can bring to the table as he comes into a league where Sauce Gardner, Patrick Surtain, young corners are making instant impacts?
Yeah, so it's kind of almost a running joke on our podcast. I thought he was the best corner in this class. He might be my favorite prospect in the entire class. I mean, younger dude at 21, the best athlete by a country mile. I mean, you see him at the combine at the podium when I went. He looks like a linebacker with his build, but is still fast, fluid, has good lateral agility. I have no idea how he fell to 17 after a trade down. I mean, that was just masterful work. I think he makes a massive impact because you can trust him to play true press man coverage against top receiving options. He's not going to maybe erase half a field as a rookie, but like you can do things with him that I do not think they had that skill set on the roster, even with good players. I like Jonathan Jones. I'm glad they brought him back. I like the young guys they had last year. The day 2 and day 3 picks. They can't do what Christian Gonzalez can do. So yeah, it's a massive, massive addition. And I think Belichick, he's good in zone. He's good in man. Like he can do a lot of different things. And I think Belichick and him are going to work up some magic in the near future.
Yeah, it could be an absolute steal. We were celebrating when he fell to 17. We're not really sure if the Patriots thought he would fall to 17. There's, of course, the talk, which is just, you know, fun fodder for radio conspiracy theorists and people hanging out in bars too long that Belichick specifically traded out of 14 so he could screw the Jets. But then again, that wouldn't surprise anyone because that's how Bill Belichick's. As far as last year as well, too, with the cornerbacks, there were times last year where I remember, because I always like to bring these things up because I look for any shreds of joy or, you know, threads of gold, whatever. You know, I'm steering into the way analytics are now driving the game. Andy's the old school representation of just like, yeah, you show me on the field. I don't want to see your numbers and your fancy computer stuff. I get excited when I see, oh, Pro Football Focus says Jack Jones has been the best cornerback over the last 4 weeks in man coverage, or Jonathan Jones is a top five corner. Do the numbers bear out that you guys think that these guys will be significant contributors this year, or are those just sort of like anomalous flashes because they have good games, like, you know, the Pats feasting on bad quarterbacks?
Yeah, I wouldn't go so far as to say anomalous flashes, but their end of season grades certainly were not as high as, you know, a lot of those graphics were to start the year. Still, you know, graded well, but I don't think either were, you know, finished the season as top 20 graded cornerbacks. And that's kind of the nature of the position, where there is extreme volatility and variance. And yeah, you make a couple splash plays, turn the ball over, get some pass breakups in a bunch of games like we kind of talked about. You know, you play Zach Wilson, I think you and I would grade pretty well against Zach Wilson in the secondary. So, but still, I do think they are good players that are going to have significant roles. Obviously, you know, weirdness with Jones, with, you know, all other stuff going on, who knows, off the field. But yeah, no, I think they are good athletes, good players. He obviously fell, I think, further than a lot of people thought because of some other off-field stuff during college. But is a talented and really athletic player that I think if they can now – the thing, too, is I think in some ways they were playing out of position and kind of being forced to do things maybe that didn't align with their skill set. I do think Gonzalez, like, that's also what he brings, is that you now can just put everyone where they really are meant to be played.
So we talked about the Bill O'Brien addition, and maybe that's the biggest addition to the offense and fixing the dysfunction. Obviously, they brought in some players, Mike Gesicki, Juju Smith-Schuster. There's a guy that I think could sneakily be the best addition of the offseason, and that is James Robinson, because I think there were times last year Ramondre Stevenson broke out but looked like he wanted to tap out of games, and there was nobody to tap out to. Damian Harris was hurt. He got worn down. And I kind of look at James Robinson and what he did in Jacksonville, and that first year he had like 1,400 yards from scrimmage, ran the ball, caught the ball. He's almost maybe a 1B to Ramondre, where he can kind of replicate all the roles that Ramondre fills. Am I too positive on James Robinson?
No, and that obviously is kind of the question mark here. You know, the Jets traded a fifth-round pick for him and kind of let him go for nothing right after, even though they could have just, you know, tagged him as a restricted free agent. So I imagine that is tied to health. But no, if not, I agree with you. I do like, in particular, getting him in on early downs to keep Ramondre fresh for a lot of those third downs and catching the ball. He's already a solid pass protector for a young running back. So, yeah, I'm very high on Ramondre, but I agree. You can't have him in a workhorse-type role. You can't have any running back in today's NFL in a workhorse-type role, really. So, yeah, I think Robinson could be a sneaky great addition as well.
So maybe from someone like yourself who follows all of these players for their various intangibles and maybe some of the things that we – as casual fans or just, you know, Foxborough faithful watchers don't understand, what do you think it would have been that would have told the New England Patriots, let's let Jacoby Myers go, even though he fits and he's well-loved in the locker room, and let's bring in Juju Smith-Schuster?
Yeah, it's a good question. I do think once we saw the details, I know initially it looked like they signed the exact same contract. I think Jacoby himself tweeted like cold world or something like that. And then the details came out, and realistically, Smith-Schuster signed for a decent chunk less. So that you could argue maybe is as big of a part of it as anything. It is kind of interesting, though. I mean, he was such a good fit. They are similar players. I think Juju offers you more out wide. I think he's kind of actually underrated as a blocker. Doesn't really get enough credit for, you know, doing a lot of the dirty work. And I think people kind of confuse his TikTok ability with it, thinking he's like a pretty boy on the field. He doesn't play like a TikToker, you know, once the ball gets snapped. So, yeah, it's a good question, though. I did find it kind of interesting. I don't have a great answer for you. But, you know, I think it might be that they want to have a guy they trust a little bit more out wide. If they want to keep Tyquan, it seems like they like him as kind of that vertical threat out of the slot. I think maybe that could make some sense.
So Fitzy and I know from experience that you're often tied to your employer and everything that goes on in that world. So WEEI, if it happens on the morning show with Greg Hill, somehow Fitzy and I are involved, even though we're off doing the Six Rings podcast. So I'm going to hold you accountable, Brad, because it's at PFF Brad. You're tied in. So I read a simulation projection for the New England Patriots that says 11-6. Okay, we can have that discussion point. 11 seems a little high to me, but we can discuss that. Then I read the details, and the 11 wins include wins over the Eagles, the Chiefs, and the Bills twice. And my simple response is no effing way. And what the F is this computer spitting out? So feel free to defend it.
Yeah, no, I'm not about it. So the sim was just dropped. It's pretty funny. I guess we can't tell people like not to talk about it. If anything, that's fine. But that's a beta that people are testing and is nowhere near a finished product in any way, shape, or form. I'm defending it. I've seen funnier results than the one you just talked about, including the Eagles going, I think, 4-13. I saw it get tweeted out as well. So
oh my God.
Like a super, super duper early stages. Like it's not, I would say it's 20% done. That's what I'll say on that.
Yeah. I know, because the second that happened, people started spreading it like wildfire. Like,
yeah,
see, look, they did make some changes. Like, they're going to be great. Like, winning against the Eagles, like, the Pats have, everyone can agree the Patriots have an incredibly difficult schedule right now, at least per winning percentage of opponents last year. Most of the teams that had good records last year, I don't think we expect to tail off. And then some of the teams that didn't have good records last season, I think we expect to improve, like, we'll say the Denver Broncos, for example, who the Patriots play on Christmas Eve. I know neither Andy or I. We host the post game show.
Who scheduled a game for Christmas Eve?
Evil. Sunday night football game on Christmas Eve. Fun for a bunch of other people to have on in the background while they do stocking gifts and whiskey eggnogs. Not fun for the guys that have to host the post game show starting at 11:47 at night until 2 a.m. We'll be seeing Santa's sleigh coming through, Brad. But that's okay. This is the grind for football. How do you think, what do you think of the Patriots, before we get into some of the draft picks and salary stuff, what do you think of the Patriots schedule from an early 3 month out perspective?
Oh, so we do an entirely different simulation based, it is tied as regress back to the market. So we are looking at Vegas and season win totals and early lines and all that, but also then our internal power rankings. They have our hardest schedule. We have them first in the NFL. Yeah. Like you said,
wow.
I don't always love looking at prior season win totals and stuff like that, or, record, but a lot of those teams should be good again. And then I think some teams they catch that maybe weren't good are trending in the right direction. So yeah, they have our hardest SOS, which is never, but hey, last year coming into the season, the team that we had first by the end of the year, I think was like 17th. Cause we adjust as the season goes on. Hey, injuries happen. The Broncos are the Broncos. You never know what's going to happen.
Hardest SOS. That's what we're going to be sending out by Halloween. It's a tough schedule, man. Like that first four games is lumber for the Pats.
We're already complaining. We're already making excuses for the losses.
All right.
So we talked about Christian Gonzalez. I think most people agree he looks great. Patriots fans went nuts on a 5-second clip from rookie minicamp, just looking at his fluidity and shorts. What about the rest of the draft? Because there's been a lot of interesting reactions. They had 12 picks. They went special teams, kicker, a punter, some coverage guys. One guy in particular that we've talked a lot about is Kayshon Boutte out of LSU, who almost unfairly seems to be facing high expectations now. It's like all of a sudden people just want to paint that game from his freshman year, 300 yards. And it's like they're forgetting this is a late round pick that if he just makes the roster and contributes with any regularity. But, Fitzy, we've talked about it. We've already seen, would you take over 45 catches for Kayshon Boutte on the season and things like that?
He's the next Steph Diggs.
Yeah, the next Steph Diggs has been labeled to him, which, no pressure there. A guy who changed the Bills' entire offense when he arrived in Buffalo. So what are your thoughts on Boutte and maybe any of the other draft picks that stick out to you?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, look, I get it from a talent standpoint. I mean, coming into this season, people thought he could be the number one wide receiver in the draft class. Growth is not linear, as we all know. And like you said, we're tying him to performances as a freshman. Look, I mean, his testing was very poor. For some reason, the combine doesn't really show up on tape. There are a handful of off-field things, which I don't want to speculate on, but he fell for a reason. No one that's around the NFL was surprised where he got taken. Even given all of his talent ability. So look, like I get why, people think he could become a total steal and all that, but you should still tether his expectations to his draft slot. That is the best predictor of a player's, a future outlook of their career. And he got taken where he got taken. So, I like their class a lot. I know it's a lot of names that weren't household names. And maybe that kind of turns some people off. I'll just touch on a couple. So, Keon White was funny where this happens every year. There was first round buzz, and I was like, that would be an insane first round pick. I watched the tape. He's clearly a freak athlete. Obviously switched over from like tight end to defensive end. He can play inside. He can kick him on the inside for pass rush snaps. So I initially hated him because I was like, there's no way he's a first round pick. But now you take him at 46, whatever it was. That's a great pick, right? Like, I have no issue with that at all. I think he will play pretty early on because of his positional flexibility. He's raw. Like, the technique isn't really there, but his athletic ability definitely jumps out. And I like that. I think that Bill will like, you can pretty much put him anywhere in the formation, depending on the down. So I think he'll be an interesting player. And then one more that jumped out to me was City So. So I'll admit, I did not watch him before the draft. Ton of experience. I think he played 5 seasons at Eastern Michigan. I think he's inside outside flex, could maybe be a tackle at some point if they wanted. But you know them, they take these big, you know, physical dudes that are still pretty good athletes, better in gap systems and zone systems, which makes sense for their offense. But still, you know, kind of like a Michael Onwenu, they're not bad athletes. They're just not these nimble, you know, 300 pounders that can dance in space. But like, I think they are going to have a better offensive line. I do wonder about the tackle spots a little bit, but yeah, anyway, I think they improved. I think it was a good class.
And what about anything on Marte Mapu? Because it seems like all right, everyone at home, drink. The Patriots are going with more of this contemporary positionless defense. That's one of our, you know, raise your shot glass words here on the podcast.
Yeah.
Marte, you know, like, but this is sort of like, it's like you've got defensive linemen, and then you've just got a bunch of guys that are all somewhere between 210 and 235 pounds that play safety, linebacker, hybrid, box safety, et cetera. Like, there's a lot of flexibility to it. I'm not sure exactly where he's going to play. I heard Daniel Jeremiah going off that he was like a steal of the draft for the Pats and one of his favorite players. Do you have anything on him, or did you get a chance to look at his tape and get a feel for what he may be able to bring?
Yeah. So always kind of tough when you're watching, you know, a smaller school guy, but he did look good at the Senior Bowl or Shrine Bowl, whatever bowl he went to. I forget which one it was now, like, did not, you know, clearly knew what he was doing and his athleticism flashed. He had an 86 run defense for us grade last year. And yet, like, we can mock and make fun of it. It is a classic Patriots pick, but their approach, I think, is genius to basically playing like one off ball linebacker at a time and then having your Peppers, Adrian Phillips, you know, Kyle Duggar, obviously, that can fill the slot. They can play down in the box. They can do everything. He's that guy as well. I think he'll mix in. He'll do a lot of different things, probably mostly down in the box. But yeah, I think he's a good player.
So we have with the Patriots three in particular young, developing fourth year players, contract year type guys that I'm interested in what their value is perceived to be from you and sort of on the open market. You just mentioned one in Kyle Duggar, who has developed into a really key piece of the back end, versatile as a second round pick. Josh Uche blew up late last year with 11.5 sacks, finally reached the potential everybody talked about. And then Mike Onwenu, a guy you talked about who was a tackle for them. You guys, PFF, loved him as a tackle early. They've slid him into guard and seem to really decide they like him at guard. But those three guys, I think a lot of Patriots fans are hoping maybe they get re-signed. Where do you think maybe the money goes with those three guys in particular?
Yeah, so I actually put out two articles this week. The first one was 8 players from the 2020 draft class on offense, and that included Michael Onwenu. And then defense was yesterday, and that included Kyle Duggar. So for Onwenu, I do think, like, Antonio Mafi is like a clone of him coming out of college. 340 pounds, big dude. Yeah, like, that's yeah. It just, to me, screams the Patriots are already having their succession plan in place. Look, he still grades very well for us at right guard. I think most of us would tell you he probably does belong as a right guard. He was just able to hold up at right tackle, you know, impressively for a rookie. But yeah, I agree with the hand signal there. I'm sure the Patriots are already figuring out the next step. If it matters, I had him projected around $14, $15 million a year on a second deal, but I would be surprised if they
yeah, exactly. Good luck.
Exactly.
Cheetah fingers, but
yeah. We know how they operate. So Kyle Duggar will also be interesting. I mean, obviously they have that skill set. I don't think any of the guys they have are his caliber. Jabril Peppers is a fun player, but is not a long-term solution on your roster. Phillips, I want to say 30 years old now, and Mapu, there's no guarantee. But look, you took Duggar top 40 for a reason. I think he's versatile, very good player. He makes plays near the line of scrimmage, like does everything you want out of a guy that you use as a jackknife type player. I had him at 4 years, $60 million on an early extension, kind of same wheelhouse as a Michael Onwenu. Look, that wouldn't even be top 5 at safety. Yeah, probably also peace sign. Yeah.
Stay, but he's anyway, stay. So,
maybe they're more open to that one, but it would not be a cheap price tag.
No. And how about Uche? Just he interests me just because double-digit sack guys, even if it's flashes in a pan, a half a season. It's such a premium position that, and he also plays in the shadow or luxury of playing opposite Matthew Judon. So I think that would affect his value in some light.
So he's interesting. He plays so little that like it's not a problem to be a designated pass rusher and have a very specific role. His pass rush win rate and pressure rate for us were legitimately top five among players. If you lower the snap threshold down to include him in the sample, it's just hard. Like, can they convince him to kind of take a bit of a, not discount, but kind of a deal that accounts for the fact he's not a full-time three-down player? I don't even want to, you know, give out a number. It's a bad number. I didn't even look into it because I really, it's hard with those type of players, you know, to know kind of how the team views them, even if they do are very valuable in an asset of football or a facet of football that is obviously extremely valuable. But he's just not a full-time player.
All right. You've shown lights on a number of things, and I'm starting to get an idea for how things work. Obviously, I would have a piles of homework to do to just start to understand or be able to crack the code behind PFF. But I think the big million-dollar question as far as where the numbers bear and what you guys think are under center, wearing number 10, Mac Jones, who I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Brad, I saw the PFF preseason ranking was 21st out of 32 starting quarterbacks heading into the league. So how much room do you think there is for vertical movement for Mac in terms of climbing the charts and, you know, let's say even cracking the top half of PFF's quarterback rankings this season?
Yeah, I mean, look, he was the highest graded rookie in his class by a good margin and obviously a good class. The thing, though, I think the kind of the knock on him coming out was like, how high is the ceiling? How much growth potential is there in Mac Jones overall? Or do we kind of already know the player that we have there and he can operate an offense? He can be a guy you win with, maybe not because of, type of player. Look, he definitely can jump up. I do think like working with Matt Patricia, it was just like, why would you do that to a second year quarterback? Why would you? I mean, look, not that every job should be handed to you. It's the Patriots, but like, bring in Bailey Zappe and give him time and create this like controversy that didn't make a whole lot of sense. Also, all due respect, he's better than Bailey Zappe. Like, I like Zappe, but like Mac Jones is better than Bailey Zappe.
Thank you.
So look, I think he could be a top half of the NFL quarterback, but you also look at the AFC alone, just the conference alone. I'm not even sure Russell Wilson and Tua Tagovailoa are top 10 quarterbacks in the AFC. Like, it's an absolute gauntlet of a conference. But yeah, anyway, long answer short, he can make the jump up. I do just wonder like how high his ceiling really is, even though I know he's a young player.
So those comps are key in sports, right? And we're learning it with the Red Sox, where every day we hear they might be in last place, but if they were in other divisions, they wouldn't be. They're a much better. Well, the reality is the Patriots are in a tough position in terms of the AFC East, in terms of the AFC. Mac's in a tough position, the quarterback's in his division, in his conference. We've touched on a variety of things, the schedule, the 11-win projections, all these things. Where do you sort of see this season going for the Patriots? Are we going to be talking about growth and improvement? Are we talking about another flip of a coin, 500, 8-9, 9-8 season? When you put it all together, where do you see these Patriots this fall?
I think it will be, and the schedule does matter. I agree. It's an excuse to a degree, but I think they win 9 games around there, and the defense will have to carry them, but I think it will. I think it's going to be an improved unit, and like we talked about at the top of the show, it already was, you know, showed up very well in a lot of areas. So, yeah, just play sound football, protect the football on offense, and just have more comfort on that side of the ball, and the defense just needs to show up and win some games for them, which they're obviously capable of doing.
Look, I've enjoyed all of your analysis on the draft, last year's team, this year's team, key contributors and more. But I knew I was going to be a fan when I read on your timeline, because we're kind of hive mind on this, Brad. You retweeted Pro Football Focus _ bet. True or false, the Jags win over 9.5 games. Somebody that you work with, Judah Fortgang, said, I think the Jags are going to be an absolute wagon this year. I hate to say it, I agree. I think the Jags are a sleeping giant, and what you saw when they went toe-to-toe and were one bad Trevor Lawrence pass away from possibly knocking off the Chiefs last year, you add a motivated, fresh-legged Calvin Ridley and another year of experience in that offense for Trevor Lawrence. Watch out. Like, do not sleep on the Jags. I think the Jags, in turn, everyone loves the Chiefs. I think the Bills may regress a little bit this year. If Aaron Rodgers, Lord knows, he's hurt halfway through his first fake practice, so God, we could do a whole half an hour on what you guys think of the Jets. I'd be fascinated, but the Jag wagon, watch out, huh?
Watch out for the Jagwagon. Unlike the AFC East, they probably, you know, have the easiest six games on their schedule of anyone with who they're playing in the AFC South. But yeah, no, the big thing for me is I think we're just forgetting that even if Calvin Ridley is like 80% of the Calvin Ridley we knew, he just dropped the number one wide receiver on a team that was already good. I think they're going to be a 12, you know, win plus type football team.
Any other teams that you're high on? Maybe, I mean, everybody knows the regular picks to go to the Super Bowl to be, but we know it's the NFL. There will be a team that everybody's like, wow, I didn't see that coming come November and has a great record. Any teams you're high on?
I would say like people are somewhat high on them, but I'm probably higher on the Seattle Seahawks than a lot of folks. Like I think they could be a legitimate win the NFC West if the quarterback situation in San Francisco is not clear. I think Arizona and the Rams stink. And the NFC conference at large stinks. And I think Seattle could be another team that could win, quietly win like 11, 12 football games and maybe win a couple playoff games as well.
Yeah, they had a really good draft as well. And you add Jackson Smith and Jigba to that receiving core as well. With Geno Smith, who I don't think is going to be a one-year comeback wonder as well. Good call. Brad, we'd love to have you back on sometime soon. Just FYI, obviously, you know, PFF for us stands for publicity for football. So we'll try to do everything we can. I make these things up as I go, Andy. Give me
it's terrible. Time. Just smile
stop
and be polite.
It. Stop, just, okay, Bob. All right. I also send beer boxes. So if you have a particular kind of, we pay in beer as well. So you can give him a follow at PFF_Brad as well. He is per the Twitter bio line, R&D salary cap analyst for Pro Football Focus, contributor for overthecap.com. Great stuff, Brad. Really enjoyed having you on the podcast, man. Thanks for hopping on with us. And maybe in a couple months, once the season gets close and we have an idea who the roster is and what it's going to be all about, we can have you back on.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. And of course.
Awesome. Thanks buddy. Appreciate it. Brad Spielberger from Pro Football Focus here on Six Rings and Football Things.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
That was a fun chat, Andy. I enjoyed that. Okay. Now, Mr. I'm not sure what I think about Pro Football Focus. How do you feel after now you had a chance to put a human face and touch to the PFF machine?
Oh, he seems like a nice fellow, and I like that he distanced himself from the simulation that's in its beta testing mode. What did he say? 20% maybe? It's about 20% accurate. So
that sounds like someone who like created an AI that's about to take over the world. Like, my intention was just to help humanity. I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah. Yes, that's Tony Stark, right, when he created that Ultron, and it, you know,
exactly.
It may go wrong, but yeah,
exactly.
He was a good humored man. I've dealt with others in his company that aren't all. They get a little more defensive if you question their numbers and their statistics. So no, I enjoyed. And let's be honest. I mean, he kind of fed my beast, Christian Gonzalez. Yep. He really likes it. He thinks James Robinson, if he's healthy, could be sort of an under celebrated addition. So I'm all in with Brad. He can come back anytime. He's one of the few good ones at PFF, apparently.
Well, I'm not sure if that necessarily was the olive branch they were looking for, but then again, you do how you do. All right, here we are on the back end of the podcast. We're going to do a little mailbag. I got some great questions from the Foxborough faithful, from the Facebook and the socials. But real quick, Andy, let's just touch on what's been the story of the midweek for Pats fans. The news dropped Wednesday evening. The Patriots have been docked, fined, or told to cancel two voluntary OTAs, two OTA days. It wasn't that Belichick didn't want his coaches talking to the media. It's that the NFL came in and said, you guys did this wrong. We're telling you to take your ball and go home for now. What do you think was behind the Patriots losing those two OTA days?
You know, it's usually too competitive or too much time on the field or too many, you know, coaches on the field that weren't supposed to be when it's supposed to be a strength and conditioning coach on the field, those types of things. It's usually relatively minor. I don't love it for two reasons.
Right.
First and foremost, we've talked about, I really like the structure that they've put together with Bill O'Brien and Adrian Clem, adults on offense, Steve Belichick and Gerard Mayo, adults on defense, Joe Judge, Cam Accord, adults on special teams, Matt Groh, the adult in personnel, Bill overseeing all the adults. Well, this structure done screwed up a little bit, and it's not uncommon. Pete Carroll did it. Mike McCarthy's done it multiple times. Super Bowl winning coaches do it. The other thing I don't love,
oh,
is the possibility that there's a whistleblower in the ranks, like somebody, you know, coming off a year where clearly there was a disconnect between Matt Patricia, Joe Judge, and the players. Did a player turn them in? Like, what happened here? I don't love that idea.
I did read that oftentimes they're now forced to tape their OTAs and voluntary workouts and submit those tapes to the NFL. Yep. And then if some sort of, well, I did notice a physical anomaly. This seems to be a little too aggressive, Mr. Goodell or Mr. Vincent, that somebody may have turned them in from the offices. That would not surprise me at all. And no, I am not trying to play to the base that is, yeah, ESPN and the NFL hate the Patriots. Defend the wall. Hurrah!
Do you think the Patriots even resonate with them anymore? That's the sadness of this.
With the NFL or their fans or both?
Just in general, the Patriots have lost they're not Darth Vader anymore. They're not the badasses that you want to hit. Mm. You're not fearful of them. They're kind of sad. They've had two losing seasons the last 3 years. They haven't won a playoff game in 4 years. They're not the big bad villain they once were. So I'm not even sure they'd resonate. Now you're right on the taping part. I think you have to submit them and who knows how closely they look at it. Maybe they do sample, like maybe it's, you know, 32 teams send them in and they just randomly pick four, look through them, see if there's anything that stands out. It could be that. I would prefer that over, you know, Hey, NFL, I just left the practice field and
this is Stamondre Revenson.
Right. Exactly. Well,
yeah,
even worse if it's somebody like that.
No, it wouldn't be him as well. And I don't think it's a whistleblower.
Throwing a name out there for no reason.
They just picked the wrong sample. It's too bad. And as far as the Patriots not being a villain or the Darth Vader of the NFL anymore, I understand. But at the same time, I find your lack of faith in the Force in Foxborough disturbing. And what else would be disturbing is if we didn't make time for all these great questions we have for a quickie mailbag here on Six Rings and Football Things. Andy, I'm just going to throw them at you fast and furious like your favorite Vin Diesel movies. Here we go. Michael Peterson on Facebook. Do the Patriots keep 5 wide receivers or 6 this year? I'm excited to see Boutte and Douglas. It seems like a crowded receiver room.
Okay. So I've heard this idea. We've even had the Bill Barnwell's, they have too many receivers. They're going to trade Kendrick Bourne. What? I mean, are we considering DeMario Douglas and Kayshon Boutte as legitimate option? Like,
apparently they're like Mike Williams and what's his name in Los Angeles now. Like, what are we talking about? Like Kurt Godwin and Evans? Stop it!
It
now.
Makes no sense to me. They are
Keenan Allen,
as our friend Brad from PFF said. They're in their like beta testing phase. Like they could just fall apart, not work, and really need a lot more time in the offseason. Like. And maybe one of them is good. I would be really surprised if both come in as late round picks and earn key roles. So I think they're a 5 receiver team. And I think it can be a stretch to get to 5. Like you know, we'll see how it goes. So you have Juju Smith-Schuster's your 1. Kendrick Bourne, Devontae Parker are your 2 and 3, right? And then you have
Tyquan Thornton.
Okay.
Kayshon Boutte's going to make it.
Oh, maybe.
I think he does. I think he does.
The fifth option is an open door, is to be won, is to be earned. The first 4, I think, barring unforeseen circumstances, are on your roster. That's my point, though. Get to 6, you couldn't get to 5. You had to say, well, we're going to win a 5th, so how are you going to get to 6? So I think it's a 5. And also, I don't rule out the 4. Bill Belichick will not keep a 5th receiver just because it says here in the NFL that most teams keep 5 receivers or more. He'll keep... You know, and we have the wild card of Ty Montgomery. Is he a receiver? Is he a running back?
Yeah, where do they sneak him in?
Mike Gesicki. Do you say, well, he's really kind of a receiver, so he's the 5th receiver. So I think there's a better chance they keep 4 than there is they keep 6.
Good point. Yeah, you keep Gesicki. You keep Gesicki. He qualifies as tight end. You keep another one as a blocking tight end. Gesicki's more of a receiver. That's how you can keep 4. Okay. That can make sense as well. And look, who knows what's going to happen with the Patriots special teams as well after the kickoff rule got passed this week. Andy, since we didn't get a chance to comment on that because it passed just after we recorded our previous episode a couple days prior, could you explain to the fans, the listenership, the Six Ringers, what exactly it means with this new kickoff rule and how this may affect the Patriots specifically, who invested so heavily in special teams this offseason?
So we know one of the new age adjustments to the already put in place kickoff rules was at times Patriots and other teams would try to kick it high and short, kick it to the 5-yard line, right? let the coverage get down, make the play, try to keep them inside the 20 or wherever it may be. This eliminates that because this new rule is you fair catch it at the 5. You do not take possession at the 5. You take possession at the 25. Wherever you fair catch it, you're at the 25. I hate it. You know I'm a football traditionalist. I saw Andy Reid pushing back on it, saying basically we're going down the road toward flag football. But Andy Reid, you shouldn't be surprised because Troy Vincent, within the last year, when asked about the future of the NFL, said flag football. Like, they're telling you where they're going. I don't know when it turns fans off, when they start to say, wait a minute, this isn't football. I don't appreciate the fact that the NFL has hypocrisy in their player safety. All right. The information tells you turf is not good for players. You should be playing on grass. All the information. And yet almost everybody has turf. Why? Cha and ching, because they can have concerts and Monster Jam and all these things easier, and their turf still looks good because it's fake and it causes injuries. Oh, so you disregard player injuries for turf, you disregard player injuries to add a 17th game, but you want to take player injuries out of the game because it's part of the game on kickoffs? It makes no effing sense, and I hate it.
Yeah, you know, also, at this point now, I know we talked the other day about how they're not going to adopt the XFL style. Instead of kicking off, you can go for a 4th and 20. I do like that. I wish they would do it. I don't find it gimmicky.
I also wish the other one.
I want them to adopt the XFL kickoff, like where you have the lines 10 yards apart from each other. Yeah, that still allows for a physical kickoff return, but doesn't allow human 225-pound padded man missiles to get a head start and crash into each other. People know what I meant. Stop it. Stop it with your curious Rock Johnson eye.
Using your lingo, I was a man missile in college.
Nope. On special teams. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay,
I was a wedge breaker back in the day when there was.
I was a wedge breaker
and part of the wedge. It may explain some things at this point in my life.
We'll just leave it at that because I'm no doctor, nor have I played one on TV. But I do a podcast and radio with you on a regular basis, and that makes a lot of sense. All right, Andy, back to the questions we go. Here we go. Greg Donahue, was there a second shooter on the grassy knoll? I said ask us about anything.
Yes,
I agree as well. Okay. Here we go. All right. Oh, Tyler Martin. Excellent one. If the Patriots missed the playoffs this year, would Belichick retire just to avoid being forced to host the next season of Hard Knocks?
Yeah, I can't imagine him doing Hard Knocks. He might just be forced to retire just because he's forced to retire. That's going to be interesting if it goes down that road, if it's another playoff-free season. And as we talked with PFF Brad about, based on the division and the competition and the schedule, they could be a better football team and still miss the playoffs. And then what happens? Dun, dun, dun.
Here's my favorite random question from Ashley Harper. Is every mirror you purchase already used? you got to love this time of year when people...
Some of them have...
No, they're never wrapped. You have to be able to look in it so you can figure out if it works or not.
No, sometimes they have it with that little, that thin layer of brown paper, like the same brown paper that the butcher might use or something. Yeah, some of them have brown paper on them. So you got to get a virgin mirror.
Ladies and gentlemen, please proceed to your 6 rings bingo card and check off at the 40-minute mark. Andy said... Virgin mirror as well. Man missile and virgin mirror. Okay, very good. I like that. Moving on. Joe LeMay, are OTAs only good for finding out who can't play, or can it be a legitimate barometer for potential NFL success?
I think it's more the former than the latter. Just because you can play in OTAs in shorts and t-shirts and look good doesn't mean you can play NFL football. But if you can't play in shorts and t-shirts, especially at the athletic positions, tight end, wide receiver, cornerback, safety, linebacker, if you can't run around and look like an athlete in those, then I find it hard to believe you're going to be able to do it when the football comes. So I did the Andrew Callahan's podcast, and we talked a lot about this, and I do think you can start to see just the competitive nature of a guy, his fire. Like the Malcolm Butlers of the world. And you're like, damn, that guy.
This guy came to play. Who's this guy? Yeah.
Right. And that doesn't mean you automatically say, you know what he is, future Super Bowl playmaking cornerback. No, no, no. You just say, I want to see what he does in training camp when the pads come on. And then I want to watch him right in the third quarter of a preseason game. I'm going to remember and see if he can build on it and start to stack them. But the old Parcells thing, if they don't bite as puppies, they're not going to bite as dogs. And if the guy can't compete on an OTA field of a cornerback, might be time to think about a new career.
This could be also maybe a spot where we see a guy like Justice Tavai, Jelani Tavai's younger brother, who was invited to the rookie minicamp and did well enough that they signed him to the 90-man roster. He's going to be one of those guys where it's like, okay, you've got a couple practices in a minicamp to show us that you're worth sticking around for the actual pretend season come August. I think it's super interesting. I think it's a great fun time. Like you said, you want to see that extra level of compete. I want some SFG, serious football guy energy brought out there as well. Of course, they did just lose two of those practices, so there's not necessarily as much room to be able to do that. Okay, fun one. From Jordan Watson, a regular with excellent questions galore usually on the pod, our lives, and more. Okay, Fitzy, Andy, imagine you guys are Bill O'Brien, minus the receding hairline and butt chin. What player besides Ramondre Stevenson are you most excited about utilizing on your 2023 offense?
Ooh, that is a good one. I don't want to beat the dead horse, so I'm not going to say James Robinson, although I do like James Robinson.
You do like you some Jimmy Rob, some J-Rob.
I am going to go back to the guy that a full year ago, I think most of Patriot Nation was excited about. I know our former co-workers, Brian Barrett and Mutt Nansky Mike, were excited about Kendrick Bourne. I think he's a versatile playmaking athlete, and people seem to forget, because of all that's gone on, that at the end of the 2021 season, he was a playmaker. Like, he was he looked like the closest thing they had to an athletic, dangerous playmaker. So I'm going to go Kendrick Bourne bounces back to that. And you look at the athlete and remember the energy? We used to just be like, oh, he's got so much fun loving energy and smiles and he makes plays. Kendrick Bourne.
I think that's a fantastic fit. I want to see what he can do again. We're not looking for Deebo Samuel 2.0. Just if you get him back to where he was in 2021 and maybe even increase just a little bit, like I think the way, if this offense works to its maximum capacity with Robinson and Stevenson and Juju and Tyquan and Kendrick, and if maybe one of these rookie receivers adds even just a little something, you know, I know there was that piece Chris Mason put out on Mass Live that I put up on our site about how his high school coach is all hype, steal the draft, get your popcorn ready. That's what those guys are supposed to do. They're supposed to be hype men for their kids. They're so thrilled that one of theirs made it to the NFL. But if you get just a little something, I don't know if the Patriots are going to be like downfield dangerous this year. However, they could be, in a best case scenario, offensively unpredictable. And that's the best thing I think Bill O'Brien can bring back, in addition to the confidence and the competence, like you've said time and again, the big C words entering 2023. Some offensive unpredictability would do this team a lot of good. Andy, we could do this all day long. I'm just going to throw one more in for you right here. There's so many we can sit. This is like a mailbag that'll just keep on giving.
How come it's not a female bag?
No, M-A-I-L. Thank you very much. We'll get canceled eventually. Could you not hasten our departure from the broadcast platform? All right. Here, where was this last one? Okay. Scott Mello. Mac was lights out with a real offensive coordinator in 21. Crap year last year. Now he's got a real OC again. I guess Brad sort of answered this one, Andy. Are you with Brad, PFF Brad Spielberger, who joined us in the first half of the program? Can he be a top 15 quarterback, and can this be a top 15 offense?
Yes and yes. Certainly, I don't actually think that's any great shakes if you're a top 15 QB or a top 15 offense. I think that's very mediocre. I would also, what was the phrase? He was lights out as a rookie.
Yeah, I guess we were so ready to be impressed because we're coming off of Cam Newton skipping footballs to people.
He was never lights out. He was terrible last year, but he was never lights out as a rookie. If he gets to lights out, then yeah, you're better than a top 15 quarterback. You're better than a top 15 offense. And we've talked a little bit about this. I think the depth of weapons that he has to work with, the running back, the many, many assets he has around them, like you have around yourself right now. I think they can be a good offense. I don't know if they can be great. I don't know if they can be lights out, but I think they can be good.
All right. We are currently joined by one of my young ones who is home on a sick day. See?
Hair day.
See, Sawyer, that's Andy. You want to say hi to everyone, Sawyer?
Hi.
Yeah, Sawyer's not feeling so good, everybody. Hi, how are you? Sawyer's not feeling too good today. He stayed home. He just finished watching the Paw Patrol movie, and now Dad is going to make his way into a different doghouse. Andy, that was an excellent episode. We thank Pro Football Focus's Brad Spielberger for joining us in the first leg, providing some statistical analysis and opinion on where the Patriots were, where they're going, and how their draft worked out. Thank you so much to everyone on Facebook, through the socials, who gave us some great questions, some great stuff to chew on. There's a few more we can get to in our next mailbag as well. Any final thoughts, Andy, before we wrap things up on this latest edition of Six Rings?
My only final thought is whether it's us or Brad or just the general media, some fans, I feel a trend toward positivity at this point in Patriot Nation. It's only May. We're knocking on the door of Memorial Day. Everybody's putting their boats in and the burgers on the grill. But I would say trending toward positivity, even if it's not quite in the positive world of beat the Eagles, beat the Chiefs, beat the Bills twice.
Yes, maybe that PFF sim of 11-6 could be a bit of a reach, but I too feel things trending in a positive direction as well. That's nice to hear. That's a great note to end on. May not be the salad days of Memorial Day where it's like, yeah, I can't wait. I got my season tickets. You get your playoff tickets yet? You book your Super Bowl tickets? Like, we're not there, but we are trending in the right direction. We got good vibes again in Pats Nation, and that's about all you can ask for. All right, for producer Justin Turpin, our guest Brad Spielberger, young sort. What's that, buddy?
We're going to the arcade.
All right, nice. We're going to go. I don't know if you're going to the arcade.
The Vegas arcade.
Okay. We might be going to the arcade. You never. It depends on how we're feeling later on. It sounds like I am, and there's going to be popsicles involved too. For Sawyer, everyone at the arcade, Andy, your old pal Fitzy, this is the latest Six Rings in Football Things brought to you by WEEI Odyssey and 2400 Sports. Thank you guys for listening. Give us a follow at Six Rings Pod. Rate, review, subscribe, and share. We will be back after Memorial Day with a fresh batch of pods heading into a pared down OTAs before minicamp in the middle of June. Thanks, everybody. Good day. God bless. And as always, go Pats.